party. Again, this is McCarty versus McCarty. Good morning.
Good morning. In case if you don't understand me, I have to repeat myself. I'm coming down from cold, so
okay.
I'm sorry.
There is water there.
Okay, thank you. Fair place is the cool. My name is Chinazo Christopher Odebo, and I'm here on behalf of Christopher McCarty. So, I'll give the court a brief synopsis, you know, so that they understand. My client, Crystal McCarty, is the appellant. She's a citizen of Jamaica, and she met Brenda McCarty in Jamaica when Brenda went on vacation. So that was in 2012. Between 2012 and 2014, they both resided in Jamaica for 2 years before the appellee, in this case, Brenda, moved back to the United States. Subsequently, my client moved to the United States, to visit the United States, and they got married here. And that was in 2014 in Pleasantville, Iowa. So from 2014 until 2017, not really much happened. You know, your marriage was going on, and then sometime in 2017, I believe, they started having problems with their marriage, and my client proceeded to file a dissolution of marriage. So I wasn't the attorney in the case. I only got involved after everything happened. So,
and can I kind of fast forward you to that?
Brilliant.
Your client had a number of attorneys during the legal proceedings.
Yes.
Did that impact the speed with which the case proceeded? Did it hinder it? Did she have continuances?
Not to the best of my knowledge. The only thing that I've seen in terms of a continuance, if I can recollect, I could be wrong, was a stipulated continuance that they both had, both parties, at the time on May 7th.
And didn't that follow a request by Brenda for a continuance, and then your client ultimately...
Exactly. That's my understanding.
To it.
Exactly. That's my understanding. So then the matter was set for trial May 16th. And on the morning of the trial date, my client was ill, who fell sick. At that time, she didn't have an attorney. She was pro se. She did the best thing that she could do at the time. She called the court's bailiff saying, I'm sick. I'm going to be asking for a short continuance. Now, she wasn't asking for the trial date to be moved. She just requested a couple of hours because she got back from the hospital so that she can put herself together and come to court. And that request was denied on the record. The court cited that there was no formal motion that was filed. So my argument is...
Would you, as an attorney, feel that you could safely call and talk to someone at the court's office and say, I'm not feeling well, so I can't be there, I'd like to have an extension, and expect that to actually be a motion entertained by the judge? Would you do that?
No, because I'm out of time. Yeah, but there's something unique about this situation, is the timing, you see. So, let's say, for example, that somebody's heading to court and then they get involved in an accident, something that is unforeseen. At that time, you can really, you know, be drafting a motion to continue the case. And, you know, when I made the request for motion for new trial, which I filed, citing the statute, I chose that specific statute for a reason. Because if you look on that subsection 3 of that statute, that I cited, it specifically make provision for things like that, something that is unforeseen. If something like that is unexpected, it wasn't like my client woke up that morning and said, oh, I'm gonna feel, you know, I feel sick. We actually even submitted evidence of our medical record in support of that. At that, again, I do understand that pro se litigants are not supposed to be held to a different standard than someone who's, you know, represented by a counsel. But even though that I may not have been able to call and expect the court, you know, to grant a continuance, in that situation, that might be the most logical thing to do, because the essence is to notify the court that something like this is going to happen. This is the reason why it's going to happen. It is not something within my control, and as such, I'm doing everything that I can, you know, for me to be able to notify or apprise the court of what the situation is. So, if a new trial is not granted, the repercussions with regards to the judgment of the court is massive. For example, Brenda McCarthy argued that they had a property in Jamaica, or 25 acres of property. Here's what the problem is. There is nothing submitted to the court in terms of evidence, you know, appraisal, location of the property, deed, anything, nothing on the record indicating that this property even exists. But it was included as part of the marital estate during the division of the property.
Has there been a property statement filed with the court prior to trial? Does the record reflect that?
I can't recollect right now. I apologize. But what I do know is that if you look at the, you know, the transcript or even the bill of exceptions, nothing was submitted. The only claim to property of this said property is that Miss McCarthy, Brenda, if I might add, claimed that she paid taxes on the property. No single proof was submitted. No documentation of, you know, the taxes that was paid, or even in a bank account indicating or any sort of financial transaction linking that, you know, anything was paid on this property.
Isn't her testimony sufficient, though, if there's nothing to controvert it?
My client wasn't there, but then it's also easy for somebody to wake up and say that they owe a bridge in East Brunswick, New Jersey. You know, that's the purpose for them to provide that. Secondly, was the issue of dissipation of fund. That was a major issue, because the reason why that's a major issue is because Ms. McCarthy alleged that she didn't have any information that my client, you know, went to cut this loan, let me not use loan, you know. This is money lent to them by a friend. There was no interest rate, nothing, a mutual friend of theirs. The money was lent to them when they were married, not during separation, not before when they were married. The money went to the same account that both of them are joint signatory to. Both of them have access to the account, and the account is in both their names. So the issue now is that she's saying that my client dissipated these funds because she paid back the amount of money that was loaned to them jointly to that party.
Well, there's no question your client withdrew $24,900 from that joint account, correct?
Pardon?
Your client withdrew $24,900 from that account.
Not necessarily. Like, she didn't withdraw $24,000 from that account.
She did.
She did not.
She did not.
Yes. So it's like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, some of these were transactions, debts that they actually owe. My client was in charge of footing the financial bill. She runs the account. What I mean by she runs the account is like, she manages the finance of the family. Let me put it that way. She has access to that information too. She has bank statements. She has that information. So for her to then, you know, indicate that she had no knowledge about, you know, any kind of transaction, how can $24,000 be withdrawn and it wasn't done like one exact time? So it's not like she was caught off guard, oh, I didn't know that this money was withdrawn. Oh, where did this $24,000 go? There's a bank statement to support that. And it's also very, very important to remember that when she even testified that she had no knowledge of this information, about this money that was paid to a third party, Mr. Parsons, they submitted every bank statement except for the month of February, which was the day, the month that that transaction supposedly should have occurred. So they provided the information except the month in question. So all I'm asking the court, or all I'm pleading with the court, is that the decision of the church be reversed, my client be granted opportunity for a new trial, and the factual matters be decided on the merit.
Would you agree that the only basis for us to be able to do that is to determine that the court abused its discretion by not granting the continuance? Because otherwise your client should have been there and put on the evidence, right? So that would be the only way for us to be able to send this back.
That would be correct, yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephanie Weber Maloney, and I represent one of the two appellees, Brenda McCarty, who's one of the two spouses here. This was a marriage of a little over 3 years before the spouses separated. There are three parties involved: my client, Brenda McCarty, her former spouse, Crystal McCarty, and Crystal's gentleman friend, John Parsons, to whom Crystal acknowledges she gave $8,700 of marital funds. At the trial court level, Crystal was represented by six different attorneys. The fifth and the sixth were both from the same firm. She was self-represented on the date of trial and failed to appear for the trial. John had legal counsel who appeared for the trial, but John did not appear for the trial either. He is now self-represented on this appeal. There's a multitude and variety of issues presented here, a lot of which are procedural. First, neither Crystal's nor John's replacement briefs are properly or adequately annotated to the record. Required sections are missing from them, sections appear out of order, and what few references there are to the transcript and the Bill of Exceptions are pretty much indecipherable. That made it a bit difficult to respond to it, but I am going to try. It would be our position that where there aren't sufficient references to the record, that the decision of the trial court should be affirmed in the absence of any plain error noted by the court, and we submit that there is no plain error on this record, so the court's decision should be affirmed. I'll start briefly with John's brief. It doesn't raise a cross appeal. It appears to me that he may have been taking a stab at it, but certainly there's no compliance with the rules that it's noted on the front page of the brief or that it's separately sectioned. So our position on him is that he's waived any potential error regarding the entry of the $8,700 judgment against him.
Counsel, can you skip to the motion for the continuance and the motion for
the motion for the continuance? For decades, this court has said, and the Nebraska Supreme Court has said, that self-represented litigants represent themselves at their peril and are held to the same standard as attorneys. I think we need to have a consistent standard that everybody can rely on. The motions are required to be written, filed, noticed for hearing, and supported by affidavits of competent witnesses. They weren't here. In fact, what was communicated to the court's bailiff was an informal communication. We all showed up thinking we were going to have a trial to find out that there was an informal communication.
Well, if you're a solo practitioner and you have an emergency situation and you're in the hospital and maybe you're even under anesthetic at some point or anesthesia, doesn't the court need to give some deference to those kind of situations? If you have no one else that you work with who can come in and file a motion, who can come in and make an appearance, is there a time when a phone call to indicate a medical emergency should be enough?
I think potentially the answer to that is yes, but this was not a medical emergency. If you look at what was submitted at the motion for new trial, she went to the emergency room. She had no debilitating condition. She was not incapacitated in any way. I believe my recollection is she was discharged with, "You're a little bit dehydrated and have a urinary tract infection. Drink some water."
Was she discharged by about 1 in the morning?
Yes.
Right?
I mean, she was, and her brief references repeatedly admitted to the hospital. She was never admitted to the hospital. I think as well that one of the statements she made at the hospital was she was nervous and worried about her impending trial. So I
just want to clear something up. It wasn't a phone call, right, to the bailiff. It was an email. It was an email to the bailiff, to which the bailiff responded, I'll let you know when the judge decides on your request.
And I think it was multiple emails to my recollection. We didn't find out about even the emails until the beginning, or right before the beginning of the trial, when the judge informed counsel of what had transpired and inquired whether we were going to trial or not. And we were like, what do you mean? Why are we going to trial? We're here for a trial. And then we were informed of what had transpired. I believe some of the emails were from her, but I believe at least one of the emails was from Mr. Parsons, who...
Right, at like 1:20 in the morning, Mr. Parsons emails the bailiff and tells her what's going on and says attached is the medical record. And then at 8-something, the appellant emails the bailiff and asks if, I can't remember her exact language, about if the judge could move the hearing for 10:30 today.
Yes, that's my recollection of what was requested. And we found out about all of this when we appeared. I believe it was the trial was scheduled for 9 in the morning, fully expecting both John and Crystal to be there. Why John didn't appear is beyond me. His counsel then participated in trial on that date.
But as to Brenda's position, it doesn't really matter if John's there. I mean, we're looking at...
No.
Brenda's the appellant here. She's the one who notified... She and actually Mr. Parsons notified the court asking for a continuance, explaining the medical situation. She was in the hospital from 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. The bailiff said, I'll let you know.
Yes, and actually Crystal is the appellant.
Oh, I'm sorry, Crystal, that's sorry. And the bailiff said, I will let you know. And the bailiff didn't.
That's correct. That's my understanding of what transpired.
So is the expectation she should have showed up at 10:30 then, since she didn't hear back from the bailiff?
The expectation is she should have showed up because she didn't file a motion with supporting affidavits of competent witnesses
but
saying here's what's going on.
But isn't that just one factor in determining whether there's been an abuse of discretion?
Yeah.
The lack of a written motion?
Lack of a written motion was just one component of this case.
Right.
So let's talk about the other three factors. Additional continuance, were they requested by her?
No, there were no additional continuances requested by her. Her
okay.
next move was to hire her seventh attorney to file a motion to vacate the decree or for a new trial.
And does the fact that she has multiple attorneys matter?
I think it does, yes, because it causes additional delay in terms of constant changeover.
Were there delays? I mean, I didn't see anything in the record that indicated
there was one prior continuance that was requested by my client, frankly, because the fifth and sixth attorneys who were with the same law firm came in about a month and a half before the scheduled trial date and obviously wanted to see if we could get things resolved. So we set things out a little further in the hopes that we could do that. Hope springs eternal.
But that was a request by your client.
That was a request by my client.
Agreed.
Yes.
Okay. So no continuances requested by her. The importance of the issues.
The importance of the issues. She's alleging she didn't dissipate marital funds. I think it's her burden under the Haluska case to account for the dissipation. She's acknowledged she took the $24,900 out of the account the day after they
had
it.
According to your client.
According to my client.
So the importance of the issue to her is she's not there for any of these issues, right?
She's not there because she is...
Has requested a continuance.
Has requested a continuance. It was not granted, and she's living with the consequences of that fact, that
okay.
she didn't appear for the trial.
And the third factor, whether the continuance was being sought for frivolous means or dilatory motives.
Honestly, based on what I saw in the records that were offered, the medical records that were offered at the trial, it appeared to me that there was no reason she couldn't appear. It's like my kid has an earache. I took him to the emergency care. We're done now. She was discharged from the hospital. She was not debilitated. She was not incapacitated in any way. And we have a situation where we've got two of the three parties just simply didn't appear for trial, didn't file any motions. We've had ongoing changeover of counsel. And with respect to that, now we've got what I refer to as the kindergarten playground argument. I didn't appear. It turned out badly for me, and now I want to do over. And at some point, you have to end this. And that's why I think the message does need to remain consistent. If you choose not to be represented by counsel, you are held to the same legal standard as people who have counsel. Because if you start winnowing away at these rules, then the people who are playing by the rules, like my client, start wondering why they should continue to do that. And we would submit it on the argument in the briefing if there's no further questions.
All right, thank you very much. So, Mr. Parsons, my apologies. I should have asked Mr. Odigbo how he would have liked to have apportioned his time, and I believe he used his entire 10 minutes. Would you like a couple minutes to come up and make any presentation to the court? Yes, please. Let's give him two. Is 2 minutes sufficient? Is that pretty thick? Well, we'll let you go. Maybe let's give him 3 minutes. All right. Do the best you can, please.
Okay. Your Honor, I am John Parsons, necessary party added to this divorce case. I was wrongfully added to this dissolution of marriage based on the Reed versus Reed Law Fraudulent Transfer Act by the request of the defendant, which does not apply to me, and was based on hearsay with no evidence upon the time I was added, nor after I was added. In the end, a judgment of $8,700 entered against me per the divorce decree that I dissipated funds. Your Honor, on 10-19-17, the defendant filed a motion to add me as a necessary party, stating I dissipated her funds. I borrowed the McCarty's funds before the filing of the divorce and was paid back before the filing of the divorce. The defendant claimed the funds were a loan, and a loan is a sum of money that you accrue interest on. The defendant failed to show any evidence of any loans other than the funds that I borrowed to them without any interest or personal gain for myself. I borrowed the McCarty's funds as a friend to help them out in good faith with promise of repayment by both parties. During the time, the defendant made multiple different claims as ownership to the funds that was repaid to me, and in the end, per the divorce decree, the funds were determined to be marital. I'm going to fast forward on some of this stuff.
Mr. Parsons, and I'm sorry now I'm going to even make it your time shorter, but is there any evidence in the record as to why you did not appear that morning of trial?
The only, my attorney advised them that I was there helping Crystal McCarty. I'm the one that transported her to the hospital. I was at the hospital during the time of her sickness.
But she was discharged at 1 a.m.
And she was discharged, yeah, approximately, I think it was 3-something, actually. I'm not positive, but she was very sick, dehydrated, still vomiting, and unable to go to court that morning. And so I contacted my attorney to ask for a continuance because she was my key witness and testimony on my behalf, along with my testimony also in this case. I was served this summons of $8,700 in Sarpy County. I had to respond within 30 days. To this motion to determine jurisdiction over me and remove me from this case. Following the motion, the defendant filed a motion continuance back to back, and my motion was never heard. To this day, the courts have not determined jurisdiction. The courts nor Nebraska have no personal jurisdiction over me as I reside in Iowa. I have no stocks, bonds, or businesses, nor properties in Nebraska, nor have I ever lived in Nebraska. I do not do business in Nebraska with any personal gain or claim to any revenue in Nebraska. As you heard that on 5/16, my attorney asked for a continuance on my behalf due to the illness of my key witness and me not being there due to me taking care of that of the plaintiff. And this is why I was not there. During the court, my attorney offered 5 exhibits, only one was allowed, showing the $6,000 coming from my bank account going into the McCarty's joint bank account of America. Both parties had access to this account with both names on the account. In the courts, the defendant claimed she had no recollection of this money borrowed. There was a text message between the plaintiff and the defendant stating, concurring, talking about paying me back the loan, showing that she did have recollection and knowledge of this said monies borrowed. Not a loan, monies borrowed. There was no interest gained on this.
You're out of time, so if you can just summarize.
What I'm trying to show here is today, neither one of us were there to present our side of the story. The defendant could say basically anything she wanted, and no one was there to object to it. My attorney could only object to certain things because he was not defending Crystal, he was defending me. So many things that were said in this were based on hearsay, as my case, with no proof of that there was a fraudulent transfer act and my jurisdiction in the state of Nebraska. I've lived in the state of Iowa all my life. I was sued from this Sharpie County to the state of Iowa, and they have no jurisdiction over me. They never proved that to start with, and they went ahead and did it. I was never notified that I was brought on as a third party by the courts, and then I was the only time I was notified was when I got that piece of paper saying I was sued for $8,700 in the state of Nebraska.
All right. Thank you very much for coming and speaking with us today.
Thank you.
All right. The matter is submitted. Thank you. Yes. And at this time, we're having a change of judges, change of the guard, yes. And Judge Arterburn will be coming in to sit on the Jonas v. Willman case.